To make good profit, don't just focus on making a good profit. Focus on helping your customers improve their lives. They benefit, and you make good profit. Just one of the lessons you'll discover in the New York Times bestseller, Good Profit, by Charles Koch, at goodprofitbook.com.
Following is a paid program.
This is the Don Dupree WLAP Show on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Welcome to the camp. I guess you all know why we're here. My name is Tommy, and I became aware this year. If you want to follow me, you've got to play pinball. And put in your earplugs, put on your eye shades, you know where to put the caulk.
Who am I? I'm Aaron Neville. On my way to Angola State Penitentiary, but not on the Angola bus.
Amazing grace.
He cares enough to come back and they see that, and it's an inspiration to them that the public hasn't forgotten.
That saved a wretch like me.
April 17, 2002, I gave my life to Christ. I used to worship Satan here. In fact, I went so far as to tattoo a 666, more or less a portrait of myself with wings as Satan.
I see.
Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show. In the first hour this week, we have joining us Burl Kane, who is head of the Mississippi Department of Corrections. I bet you wondered with this intro music where we were going. That's where we're going. So without further ado, Tom, take it away.
Turn that back up. Right there is Aaron Neville of the Neville Brothers from New Orleans. And this is righteous. I mean, this is just righteous. He's talking about Angola, which is the...
I think I might have been trying to get on that bus.
There's him being interviewed.
Like a status thing, you know?
Yeah, this is a little clip we got. Yeah, it's just something else. I am so delighted, but I got to read the scripture first. Let's don't get ahead of myself. Psalm 77. I cried unto God with my voice, even unto God with my voice, and he gave ear unto me. In the day of trouble, I sought the Lord. My sore ran in the night and ceased not. My soul refused to be comforted. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. Thou holdest my eyes waking. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. I call to remembrance my song in the night. I commune with mine own heart, and my spirit made diligent search. Will the Lord cast off forever, and will he be favorable no more? And then we skip to verse 11. I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember thy wonders of old. I will meditate also on thy work and talk of all thy doings. Thy way, O God, is in the sanctuary. Who is so great a God as our God? Okay, this is really neat. We have Burl Kane with us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where he lives, but he works in Jackson, Mississippi, where he is the head of the Mississippi Department of Corrections, is doing some remarkable things in the prison systems, and we're here to talk about that today. Burl, welcome to the Tom Dupree Show.
Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate it.
Thank you for being on with us today. That clip was with Aaron Neville was from when he came and visited the inmates at Angola up in West Feliciana Parish, north of New Orleans, up the Mississippi a little bit. And Angola was an old plantation. It's the Mississippi main penitentiary. I'm sorry, Louisiana main penitentiary, as I understand it. And you were the warden of that prison for a number of years.
Right, 21 years.
Okay, so tell us, let's just get to it here, as we say in Kentucky. What things did you do during that time that distinguished you from other wardens that might have gone before?
Well, it wasn't really what I did. It's what God did, and I was amazed at what he did do, because I wasn't smart enough to change that prison and make it turn around like it did. It had to be a God thing, and I would look up at the sky and say, thank you, Jesus. I wasn't that smart to think of that, and so thank you. But anyway, what happened was, is right after I got there, I did an execution, and right after that then really caused me to realize, hey, you got to really take it way more serious, because somebody's in the grave because of this guy. And you're supposed to change and correct deviant behavior. That's what corrections mean, and not just lock and feed. So we really moved on to that modeling. It wasn't but 3 months later till some folks came along and said, hey, I would complain about higher education because I didn't have any. And I'm a school teacher. I never worked in a prison till I was a warden. I was the warden of the prison and never had worked in one before. So anyway, I was crying about higher education. They said, hey, why don't we do the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary? That'd give you some higher education. So I jumped on it, and that's what we did. But that was the culture changer and the real game changer, because what happened is we learned about peer ministry, and that if we could produce our own preachers in prison that were inmates, long-term inmates, do it with the separation of church and state, then we could change the culture of the prison. And that's what happened.
Okay, so flesh that out for me a little bit. You're saying that the New Orleans Baptist Seminary decided to come in and set up a sort of an outpost, if you will, but you're dealing with people that might not have had a college degree, and maybe even a... We're getting some feedback here.
Yeah, it'll go away in just a second.
Okay. That might not have even had a college or a high school degree. How are these people going to jump right into seminary?
Well, what happens is, you know, some high school, some prisoners are educated, have high school diplomas and so forth. And so they all wanted higher education because the seminary was accredited just like LSU. So if you do a 4-year course there, then you got a real degree that really counts. And that's a big thing towards reentry. But what we did is we targeted long-term inmates because we had to raise the money from the private sector, and we wanted to get more bang for the buck. We knew we didn't do it for them individually. It was what they could do for the rest of the prison and to change the other inmates. And so it really did work. I give you an example. If your pastor at your church got on an airplane and went to the Bahamas as soon as the sermon was over, didn't come back till the next Sunday, your church wouldn't thrive.
Right.
And that's what prison ministry does. These people, they're wonderful. They need to do it, but they're not there to preach the funeral and sit on the bed with them at night, console them when their mother passes away or their wife leaves them. So it just made for more of a community by having their own pastors.
So I'm familiar with a lot of people around here in the recovery group, people that are into long-term recovery. But one of the things that they say is that prison does not equal recovery.
Prison should.
Yeah.
It can't. And it is. And we're doing it in Mississippi because now we've started an addiction program that are based on the 12-step program where inmates are basically teaching the program, but it's going to be a six-week program and then we'll have aftercare. Because inmates are the best resource, untapped, that we have in our prisons today. Because many of them change. We want them to change. We want them to realize the error of their ways and correct it. And we give them a mechanism to correct what they've done by helping others. And what we need to learn is that moral people don't steal your lawnmower. So in prison, if we can teach morality, not religion, morality, just moral rehabilitation, then we can change lives, but we make prisons safer.
Right. Let me ask you this. You served at Angola. And Angola, of course, is legendary. I mean, anybody that's studied the blues or history of the South or things of that nature has heard of Angola prison. Let's get off the topic right. Tell me some comical or interesting or any kinds of experiences that you might have had during your experience there that stand out to you.
Oh, gosh, there's so many. I think one of the strangest ones was when an inmate that had been at Angola, it was one of our inmate ministers had gone to another prison, and he didn't feel like it was okay there. So he escaped and called me on New Year's Eve 2015 and said, look, I've just escaped from the prison. I want to come back to Angola. Will you come get me? And so that was about the most craziest thing I ever heard.
So what happened? I mean, did you just go get him?
No, what I did is my wife said, she said, it's a setup. Don't go. They're going to ambush you. And I said, well, I don't have time to call a tack team, so get me two guns instead of one. So,
oh, my God.
As I was getting dressed. Then I called the director of correction, the secretary of correction, and got him because I picked him up on the way, and we went to meet him. And so he was escaped, but just before we got there, it was about an hour and a half away from us, and they caught him because he had escaped in the ambulance. So it's pretty easy to find somebody in the ambulance.
Oh, my gosh. These guys don't always think that far ahead, I would say. Perhaps
that was pretty hilarious. But anyway, you know, the thing that was greatest about it was the stories of redemption and how they changed their lives and then how they reacted back with the public. And it was so safe in Angola that we could bring little children down death row, and there was no profanity. The inmates were the ones that came to me and said, there's too much profanity. We all need to quit cursing. And so you just don't hear that ever, but I heard that, and so we all did. We made a rule. Profanity is outlawed, and inmates and us too, but that's when the culture really changed in the prison. You would go a weekend with there were 6,325 inmates there when I left. You'd go a weekend with no fights, no violence.
Really? That's amazing.
Right. Now, look, here's a good thing. We're doing this same program, and we had done it at Parchment, Mississippi State Penitentiary.
Parchment Farm over in the Delta.
That's right. And so we're really proud to announce that in the 1 year, the violence at Parchment dropped 52%. So what you did is, it wasn't me. It was we did another unique thing. Some of these inmate pastors, and there was about 200 of them in Angola, and now, but they're in the 19 other states. So this is working everywhere. And we have research from Baylor that proved it worked. We raised $1.3 million to pay for the research, and we had to prove it, and other states are doing it as well. And I just was in Kentucky and met with the commissioner there, and she wants to start and do it because it really changes the culture of the prison, and we see revival going back into the community from the prisons, because where do the prisoners come from? They come from some of the worst areas of our communities, but if we send them back as changed people, then we have revival there. So this is really working, and it's working well. And accepted across the country.
Do you know? Go ahead.
I will give you an example. We have a seminary in Oregon, the most liberal state in the country. There's one in Oregon with Corbin University, and we have one in Wisconsin. We have one in Illinois. So they're all across the country. That's good.
Okay. Now, let me ask you something. What, you know, with inmates, with people who get into the prison system and kind of get into this loop, if you will, what do you see is one of the more common characteristics? Would it be fatherlessness? Would it be, long-term exposure to violence? What are some of these symptoms that people go through kind of on their way to getting in the prison system?
Worst thing is too many young people don't get prepared for life in society by preparing themselves for a vocation. We have to have a vocation, and we have to have a job. And so they don't. They drop out of school. And when they drop out of school, and a lot of that's no debt. When they drop out of school, they don't have a skill or trade. They resort back to violence and to stealing and to extortion. And that's where these gangs come to play. And so we don't parole anybody from Mississippi that's gang affiliated. We're about to get to that point, and we don't do early release for people that are in gangs, because you release people who make a living with extortion and corruption, and you don't want to turn that back on the public. So we have to fight the gangs. But mainly education. Don't drop out of school. And the other problem is we should fork off, if you really want to know what, at the eighth grade, where we have two academic levels. One is academic, and one is skill and trade. Everybody can't go to college. Everybody maybe not can make A's in math, but they can learn a skill, and they don't like to fail, so when they start failing, they drop out of school. But if you had skills and trade, the vocational, that direction, starting at the 8th grade through the 12th, and when you graduate, but you get your certified welding certificate or your certified air conditioning certificate, then you can go right on into a job. But we don't do that. We don't really educate like we really should. We need to focus on skills and trade.
Go ahead.
That's foreign to you, isn't it?
No, it's. I like what you're saying. Do the prisons have the ability or the resources to actually provide training schools for these different trades, or can you work out a work release element of their incarceration that would allow them to, you know, come out of the prison, go work in the private sector, learn what they're doing and learn a trade, and then come back and finish out their sentence?
No, the thing needs to be in the prison, because what happens is they need to bring that culture to the prison. The prison needs to be the largest vocational school you have in your state. And in Mississippi, we've committed $6 million to reentry programs. And so we're going to, and here's a good thing. The teachers for these vocational schools are the inmates who already possess those skills. Everybody in prison was doing something normally. You have a lot of people who know all kinds of skills. Find them, equip them, and get them NCTR certification. That's like the ASE for automotive mechanics. And then the prison has to be maintained itself with maintenance, air conditioning, the vehicles it has, but have inmates teaching other inmates how to maintain and do all this, and then get them certification.
Right.
If an inmate gets out of prison and he's certified with ASE certification in brakes, in front end alignment, he will get a job at the Goodyear store or those kind of stores or the car dealerships. We just have to equip them in prison for jobs rather than just send them. We worry about their morals all the time, but we don't do their skills and trades because it costs money. We don't have the money for teachers, but the teachers are the other inmates. That's what I'm trying to show this whole country, that we got our untapped resource is our prisoners, and they want to do something productive because their families appreciate it. They get out and they don't hurt you again. They got to have a job.
You're talking about turning prisons from a place with a yard and a guard up there on a tower with a gun looking down on everybody, turn them from that into sort of like a big college.
It's really a place where we are, again, to correct deviant behavior. And what you have, even in Kentucky, and not even in Kentucky, but in a lot of states. But you have a commissioner of corrections now, and I don't know what you had in the past, but really believes in education, really believes in skills and trades, really believes in vocation. And that's why we're going to start one of those seminaries in Kentucky, because it trains the inmates to change their lives by other inmates teaching the others. And so that's what we're doing. And you're doing it in Kentucky, but it's a long way because it's 4 years to get this degree. But this is the model that we're teaching and following, and this is what we did at Angola. We know it worked because we have the research that proves it. And we had inmates teaching inmates skills and trades, and inmates getting jobs as soon as they got out, and the parole board or the parole people, probation parole, drug test them and monitor them and see that they stay on their job.
Right.
Then they transition right back into being productive citizens and taxpayers.
What happens in the case of recidivism? If somebody falls through the cracks, they drop back. Do you have a way to give them a safety net and get them back on the right track?
That's kind of what we're doing with these addiction centers, because most time they fall off because of addiction, because they're addicted. And so if we don't deal with their addiction problem while they're in prison, then they get out and then they resort right back to the drugs, right back to the addiction, and then you can't keep the job. You lose the job that we trained you for. So if we teach you skills and trade, we must deal with addictions in prison. Prison should be a place to change people's lives. We need to have less victims of violent crime. If we do our job, and that's what will occur. And that's what we're trying to do in Mississippi, and really get out here in front of it and change people's lives, have less violence, reduce recidivism rate, and make them productive citizens. This is doable.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. We're going to talk some more here. We ain't done. We got another half. But I don't see how every governor in every state, not only in the U.S., but worldwide, would not get behind what you're doing here.
Are you looking for your dream home? Well, that means you're looking for your dream loan. At UK Federal Credit Union, we make that dream a reality. UK Federal Credit Union has home loan options to fit your needs with quick pre-qualifications. Plus, you can get special incentives with our Home Plus program to save on closing costs. Apply online at ukfcu.org or at our 6 branch locations. First Mortgage Services is provided by our partner, SWBC Mortgage Corporation. UKFCU is an equal housing lender, and for full details, visit ukfcu.org.
With MailChimp, you get more than a URL. You get an all-in-one marketing platform to help drive sales with things like data-driven recommendations and powerful automation tools. Get started today at MailChimp.com/smartmarketing. MailChimp, built for growing businesses.
They are, really. I think so. And we're working with them, and we're really, really doing that. And again, it wouldn't be in all these other states if people weren't accepting, embracing it. But what really was helped us was the research. If you don't have evidence-based research, people are skeptic. And then we realized that we want people to come in our prison and preach and do ministry, but we want them to let the inmate be in the pulpit.
All right, Burl, we're wrapping up the first half of the first hour. We're going to go to a break. You're listening to the Tom Dupree Show. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Stay tuned.
The hottest happening right now.
It is so hot.
Happens right here.
More expensive crime.
The Delta variant.
Open border.
At the top in 30 minutes past the hour.
This is like the hot spot for news.
News Radio 630 WLAP.
Hi, this is Tom Dupree. What actually makes a difference in life? Is it Bitcoin? Is it gold? Perhaps it's bonds, racehorses? No. Of any economic entity in which you can invest, the ones which actually make a difference are corporations. They are maligned, taxed, demonized, run by left-wing ideologues, but still, they must produce a profit. They cannot afford to invest in things the way that government does. Their investments must show a profit. Their investments must be productive. We believe our clients like to think their investments are being productive, both for society and for them. For a free review of your retirement investment portfolio, call Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show, Saturdays at 7 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Tickets are on sale now for our 2021 iHeartRadio Music Festival. September 17th and 18th in Las Vegas. Billie Eilish, Cheap Trick, Coldplay, Dua Lipa, Florida Georgia Line, J. Cole, Journey, Khalid, Lil Baby, Maroon 5, Nelly, Sam Hunt, Weezer. Special guest performance by Phineas. And more on the T-Mobile Arena nighttime stage. Get tickets now through AXS.com. That's AXS.com.
iHeartRadio Earth is here with little tips for a healthier planet. A staggering 8 million tons of plastic ends up in the world's oceans every year. If current trends continue, our oceans could contain more plastic than fish by 2050. Do your part. Purchase items made from renewable or recycled content and recycle whenever possible. Brought to you by iHeartRadio Earth and the National Environmental Education Foundation. To find more tips for smarter, sustainable living or to take action in your own community, go to iHeartRadio.com/earth.
Drive-by birthday parties, virtual weddings. In a world full of things you never thought possible, here's one more. Now you can get Allstate's quality insurance at an affordable rate. When you bundle your home and auto, you'll save up to 25%. With Allstate, you can lower your rates, not your expectations. Visit Allstate.com or call an agent for a quote today.
In most states, prices vary based on how you buy. Savings vary, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company, Allstate Vehicle and Property Insurance Company, and affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.
Scattered showers and thunderstorms throughout the day on this Saturday as temperatures trying to warm up into the 80s, but could be tough with those storms coming through. Some storms could be on the stronger side, producing low visibility with that heavy rain and gusty winds. I'm WKYT meteorologist Adam Burson.
Broadcasting live 24/7 from the heart of Big Blue Nation, this is News Radio 630 WLAP, an iHeartRadio station.
In season 2 of the hit podcast, Paper Ghosts, investigative journalist M. William Phelps searches for the truth behind the tragedy of July 4th weekend, 1981. A massive fire engulfs a farmhouse in America's heartland. Four members of a wealthy Ohio family are dead, but was it the fire that killed them?
My brother says, Carol, something's up. They're not telling us everything. That is not a fire. There is too much blood.
Listen to season 2 of Paper Ghosts on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're wondering what's going on in the markets these days, you're not alone. It seems the conventional metrics of discerning value in markets has been thrown out the window. Perhaps it may help to look at interest rates, which are lower than ever. They are lower than in my dad's time in the business and in my granddad's time. Interest rates can justify valuations in the stock market, and lower interest rates can support higher valuations. So maybe things aren't that crazy. We talk about stuff like this at Dupree Financial Group. For a no-obligation review of your retirement investment portfolio, call us at 859-233-0400 or go to DupreeFinancial.com. And be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays from 7 to 9 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. That's Dupree Financial Group at 233-0400.
630 WLAP.
Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show. Joining us this week is Burl Kane. Burl is the head of the Mississippi Department of Corrections. And we're glad to have him. We're learning a lot about what is going right in prisons these days.
That was good how you did that, honey. You ought to think about a career in radio.
I'm actually circling back around.
Well, Burl, it's a great pleasure to have you here on the show today. Before we get back into talking about your work in the prisons, I noticed in your bio that you were from Western Louisiana, Vernon Parish to be exact, near Leesville, Louisiana. When I lived in Houston back in the early 80s, I would sometimes leave out of Houston early in the morning. I'd drive over to Beaumont or Lake Charles, and once or twice I drove right up the Sabine River on the Louisiana side, just straight north, and going up, you know, and looking at the little towns in Louisiana. That's a part of Louisiana you don't hear about very much. Far western, a lot of pines, timber operations, paper mills and things of that nature all up through there. But it was an interesting little area, not at all like New Orleans or the Cajun areas at all. It's much different, right?
Right. It's the piney woods, and that's kind of a lot of poor folks and just piney woods and timber, not a lot of industry, just country.
It's a little bit like East Texas, the part of East Texas that's closest to the Louisiana border. You got some big lakes up there. You got Toledo Bend, Sam Rayburn, that's more over in Texas. Toledo Bend splits the line between Louisiana and Texas. Good bass lakes. You get farther north, Caddo Lake. Well, I think that's kind of in both. You get up towards Shreveport. I always enjoyed that area. I thought it was nice, and like you say, it's really back in the country.
You know, it's kind of primitive land because the Mississippi Louisiana Purchase was the land drained by the Mississippi River, where the Sabine River was the border of Texas, and so Calcasieu River drains all that land. So that was a real true no man's land in the early ages, early times of our country. So Jean Lafitte would park his pirate boat in Lake Charles, and the Portuguese there would get off the ship and the boats. And so that's kind of, they would marry the Indians. And so that's kind of the culture of the people there a little bit. It's a little bit different.
Also, people don't realize this. There was some Dutch influence in Western Louisiana. You have the little town of Zwolle. I think there's one called DeWitt. People don't realize that there was Dutch influence in Western Louisiana.
It is. It sure is.
So,
and there's some German influence, a lot of German influence too.
Right. It's fascinating. Those kinds of things are so fascinating to me. So tell me, you talked a little bit about what we've been doing in the prisons here and what you're going to do, and we're going to get back to that, but if you don't mind, tell us a little about you, how you came up, how you ended up getting to where you are today.
Well, my mom was a school teacher. My dad was a farmer, and we had cattle in the open range. And so we grew up, you know, poor and primitive, but she insists we all go to college. And so whether we wanted to go or not, we had to go. And she decided I needed to go to LSU. And so she took me down and put me out, told me, "Don't you flunk out, boy." And so
right.
I said, "Yes, ma'am." And so it was a struggle. I'm telling you, it was really hard, a different world. But I worked at the Beef Barn, and we worked and got through. And anyway, then I wound up working for the Farm Bureau, and then I wound up having my degree with Bo Ag Education. I'm an ag teacher. Then this job came open in the Department of Corrections to run the farms and industries, and I got that job. And so from there, that was appointed by the governor, Governor Edwin Edwards, and then the prison job came open. I wanted to be a prison warden, and so I applied. I qualified technically, but I never worked in a prison before, and so I told the governor, he said, "I can give you the job. I can't help you keep it." And I said, "You won't be sorry. I can do it." And so I got the message from my mom. She said, when I told her I'm going to be a prison warden, she said, I'm going to tell you one thing. I raised you right. You went to church every time the door was open. And she did. She said, God's going to hold you accountable if those men have a chance to know him. And that came back to me. That night I did that first execution, I did not tell that guy or say anything to him about his soul. And everything his mother, everything my mother had told me came back to haunt me, that I was the last human on this earth. And that's when I committed myself to really, really do everything in my power to change the culture of the prison and change the people. And so it was from her. And that was a big deal to me. And then my father, he had a favorite scripture, and I'm going to read it to you if you don't mind. It's 2 Chronicles 7:14. It says, and if my people who are called by my name would turn and change their ways and pray, I will turn my face back toward them and heal their land. So that's kind of scanned it there, but that's kind of what prison is. He healed their land because they did, with the seminary and all, turn back to God, and that's what we really need to do in this country. And we see revival coming from the prisons, and that's what's really cool. And so prisons are a place of change, and we see all the pain that's caused by all the crimes they commit, and then we want to just change that. That's what we see in America today. I think we're seeing a great change in our prison, and a lot of folks are moving the way we are in Angola and the way we are in Mississippi.
We know it's painful, you know, to know this, but people typically do not change unless they're confronted with what I would call an intractable situation, something that they can't talk their way out of, weasel their way out of, run their way out of. That's when people finally sit down and look in the mirror. And prison is where that can happen. I've been in the corporate investment world for 42 years, and companies quite often, if they're facing bankruptcy or considerable difficulty, they will take
Are you looking for your dream home? Well, that means you're looking for your dream loan. At UK Federal Credit Union, we make that dream a reality. UK Federal Credit Union has home loan options to fit your needs with quick pre-qualifications. Plus, you can get special incentives with our Home Plus program to save on closing costs. Apply online at ukfcu.org or at our 6 branch locations. First Mortgage Services is provided by our partner, SWBC Mortgage Corporation. UKFCU is an equal housing lender, and for full details, visit ukfcu.org.
Drastic measures to change how they're doing things. If they're making a lot of money, everything's fine, they're booking along, there's absolutely no reason to change, and they usually don't. It's true with human beings also. You're not going to get people to change until the circumstances become so painful that they have no other alternative.
Right, that's what it is in prison. That's why it's the perfect place to have the seminary and equip inmates to change other inmates, because they're on their knees in there. And that's where you can change them. And they're living hard, but they're looking for a better life, and then they want to change their life, and they want to excel with their family and make up for the things they did wrong. And what we really saw was when an inmate wanted to tell a victim's family, I'm sorry, I hate what I did to you, and I beg your forgiveness. And when we see that, we know they really have changed. And that's what we're looking for, is for them to want to give back, because to be great among your peers, you must give and give and not be a taker. Because a prisoner normally is a thief. He takes what he wants. He steals your body, your car, whatever he wants. And we have to make it be the opposite of that to really change their life. Otherwise, they just do the time and get out and do it again.
Right. Burl, let me ask you something. Going forward with these programs of change in these prisons, like, for instance, you're talking about doing it here in Kentucky, how practically can my listeners, who are predominantly in Kentucky, help to facilitate change and new beginnings, if you will, take place in the Kentucky prison systems?
Well, you're asking me right on the front end of what's happening, because I was only there 3 weeks ago. What I have to do next year is I have to set up a nonprofit, and we'll come to Kentucky and do that, and we'll even put up the money from the nonprofit we have, Prison Seminary Foundation, to pay for their nonprofit, which is about $4,000 or $5,000. But we have to raise all the money to pay for the seminary every year to keep the separation of church and state. Not one tax dollar can go into this program. And that's what's happening in all these other states. So Kentuckians, at some point, we're going to be asking for them to help us pay for this school. And this school is going to cost about $140,000 to $150,000 every year. And we've been able to sustain that in all these other 19 states. And we don't forget the women. We have women's seminaries as well. Now, they're non-denominational. So it's going to be like we have the Baptist Seminary in Louisiana, Mississippi. But the people who go to the seminary can be any religion or no religion. We don't care. We were looking for the morality is what we're looking for, but the religion catches them. And so that's what happened. We're producing missionaries and preachers. Then these graduates will go in groups of four to all the other prisons in the state of Kentucky, and then they'll start changing the culture in those prisons. And believe you me, the research proved it changes. In Texas, they're field ministers is what we call them, and already in 60 prisons in Texas. And so everywhere they go, the wardens love it because the prisons are safer, and they change. And so that's what we have to do in Kentucky. We have to build this nonprofit that we haven't even started on, and we have to then let the nonprofit raise the money and give the money to the seminary, working as a three-legged stool. The seminary is one leg. The prison system is the other leg. The nonprofit is the other leg. They work all three together to support the school, so there's no tax dollar. That's how it works. So Kentuckians are going to have to step up somewhere, and we'll find them. God is going to provide. We've never failed.
No, you'll find them. In fact, you're listening to one of them, or you're talking to one of them right now.
Well, good. Thank you a lot.
Yeah.
We'll talk later.
Yeah, we will. You know, it's remarkable. I mean, people have been praying for a revival and this and that, but it doesn't always come out of the sources you think it's going to come from.
Right. It's coming out of the prisons where it's coming from.
That's amazing. But those are the least among us, in a sense. Those are the people that have been the most humbled and humiliated, and therefore they are the ones that their hearts have been prepared through circumstances to receive the word and to perhaps preach the word also.
Listen, the chaplains at Parchment that are Mississippi Department of Corrections employees, chaplains, are graduates of the seminary in Angola. One of them did 42 years in Angola. They're juvenile murderers is what they are. They went to the seminary. They changed their lives. They became productive citizens. They got parole. We switched the parole from Louisiana to Mississippi, and they're state employees in Mississippi being chaplains. They can go in every cell block. They can go in death row. They go everywhere. They're not afraid, up and down through there, evangelizing and carrying whatever religion. It can be a Muslim. We don't care. Whatever religion they are, take morality with you. And that's what made that 52% drop in violence happen at Parchment, no doubt about it. Because these are productive, God-loving, God-fearing people.
Okay.
That were murdered.
I got to ask you, I can't let you off here. Can't let you off here without asking a little bit about your LSU Tigers. And what's going on? I'm sure you probably go to the games and that sort of thing. And what kind of football season are we going to have out of your LSU Tigers this year?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm a Mississippi State Bulldog right now. We just won a
national championship. Yeah, you did. you did.
With baseball. I'm real proud of them. But LSU, we don't know. We timed out on them. We got a lot of issues, and so we don't know what's going to be. We're hopeful.
Well, Elizabeth, my wife watched every inning of that World Series, and I tell you what, I had a lot of Ole Miss friends that are kind of eating crow right now. So go ahead.
Well, they were talking one of the highlights with that Mississippi State baseball winning the championship is when you're dealing with a small town, it becomes just the biggest thing. Those kids on that team will be folk heroes from here on out. And that's the best part of that story, I think.
It's an amazing story. Wonderful. I couldn't tell you. I mean, I love them. I have T-shirts now. Bulldogs. Go Dogs. Used to be Go Tigers.
Well, and they were talking about how, I don't remember what the car trip was from Mississippi out to Omaha, but it was 17, 18 hours, it seems like I remember. And that stadium was full of red. I mean, it was
amazing.
It was amazing.
It's actually maroon.
Crimson. let's not split hairs. Red, maroon.
My uncle, Dave Galtney, who lived in New Orleans, was a Mississippi State graduate and was in the same dorm that Jerry Clower was in. This was back in the 50s. It was a dorm called Old Main. It burned down in the 50s. It held like 1,500 men. It was a crazy place. But Mississippi State has got some remarkable stories, some remarkable history, and a bunch of really super nice people.
They are good people. I like Mississippi. I like where I live. I actually live in Jackson. You know, I just happened to come over here this weekend to go to the doctor. But I like it up there. It's a good place to live. It's a good state. It's very progressive. It has a good governor. And they really allowed us to make these changes and corrections.
That's
because
good.
They want it to be better, and that's really good.
Well, we were in a wedding, or at a wedding, not in the wedding, but we were at a wedding in Jackson. What's it been, honey? About 6 weeks ago?
Earlier in the summer.
Yeah, earlier in the summer. Stayed at the Fairview Inn down near the Millsaps College campus and had a great time. So you're in a wonderful state. Listen, I just want to, will you perhaps, can we check in with you from time to time to find out how we can aid and abet this process that you're going to be doing in the prison system here in Kentucky?
Oh, yes, and I'll be back up there to see you, and I'll be talking to you, and I have to do this, and we have some other guys that work in our nonprofit. I'm right now pretty inactive because I'm so busy in Mississippi, but we will be in touch, and I'll personally be talking to you, and we'll keep in touch because we got to move forward. We got to go to other places, and you're going to see it work and change the culture of prisons there. Doc is doing it in Mississippi, so it's a good thing. Yes,
right.
Keep in touch. I am.
Okay, we're going to do that, and I just want to say that I've had numerous friends in the recovery community around here. Some of them have done some prison time. And despite the fact that the experience was a bit of a heart stopper for them or for anybody, because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with your life, but they hit a point. It's like Bill Wilson talks about in Alcoholics Anonymous, the book, where finally, you know, you hit a bottom, if you will. That's what the AA people and the addicts and those talk. And that's when there's a opportunity for spiritual growth and spiritual change when that happens. And it sounds like you guys are grabbing people right as they're hitting that bottom, which is the most effective time to do it.
Absolutely. You got it. You understand it. It's what we're doing.
Praise God. That's beautiful. And so we're going to be thinking about this and trying to do what we can to help you stay in touch with what you're doing, help you with anything you need up here. We'll be on top of it, because I totally believe in revival, and that the country needs more of Jesus Christ and more love, and we got to change, and it starts at the bottom, and that's a great deal.
And really, there's never been a more important time in the country's history with all of the violence that we're seeing. And I'm sure with the gang activity and the border issues we've got going on, the prisons are going to be kind of the nucleus of really helping things get turned around from the inside out, so to speak. So, Burl, thank you so much for joining us this week. We hope the listeners have learned something. And if there's ever a truer thing, education is so important. Digging us all out of the mess that the country's in and what's going on in our prisons. So we will be back in just a few minutes with our financial guys to go over what's been going on in the markets.
Thank you. Thank you, Burl.
Yeah,
appreciate
thanks
it.
Again.
We'll be thank y'all so much. See you later.
We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of the Tom Dupree Show. Stay tuned.
Railroad track in my neighborhood. Ain't no trains around that far. Just ain't no good. I don't know what's going down.
Hi, this is Tom Dupree. What actually makes a difference in life? Is it Bitcoin? Is it gold? Perhaps it's bonds, racehorses? No. Of any economic entity in which you can invest, the ones which actually make a difference are corporations. They are maligned, taxed, demonized, run by left-wing ideologues, but still, they must produce a profit. They cannot afford to invest in things the way that government does. Their investments must show a profit. Their investments must be productive. We believe our clients like to think their investments are being productive, both for society and for them. For a free review of your retirement investment portfolio, call Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays at 7 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Trendy new buzzwordy business book or a modern classic from a CEO with a real-world track record of decade upon decade of exponential business growth. It's your call. Discover Good Profit by Charles Koch. Timeless truths. Buzzword free at goodprofitbook.com.